Mr. Jewell, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and honored members of the ERRE committee. I thank you for this opportunity. My presentation is entitled PPR 123, Perfect Proportional Representation, the Ideal Electoral System for the Digital Age. Briefly, PPR 123 is as easy as 123. Voters run, we have the same writing system on the ballot. The voters choose their top three candidates, 1, 2, 3. The votes are processed according to alternative vote, the same system Australia has used for almost a century. Does not need computers to do that. The difference part comes in Parliament, because no first-place vote is ever thrown away. Every first-place vote is held in trust and by an elected representative of the party of the voter's first-place vote, and cast with every vote in Parliament, thereby giving you perfect proportional representation. And I note that Professor Russell, in his address to you, said that, in his opinion, the first principle should be enhancing the capacity of elections to produce a House of Commons that represents the political preferences of the people. And with PPR 123, we carry the votes of the citizens, the honest, uncoerced first-place vote, into Parliament with every vote in Parliament. Now, many experts have told you that there's no perfect voting system, and I'm calling this perfect proportional representation rather conspicuously to draw attention to it and ask you to be the judge whether this achieves that or not. But what I can say is that all existing voting systems have many well-known and serious defects, and by now this committee must be very well aware of them. And the only logical conclusion should be to look for a better alternative. Now, I got to that point myself in 2004, following very closely the work of the BC Citizens Assembly. And with my strong background in mathematics and systems analysis, I thought I should be able to make a contribution to the whole process. And so what I did was I first tried to invent a better system on my own, and I ended up reinventing the board account. Then I went into serious research to see what other people had, and I found a real gem. And this was my eureka moment. And it was a proposal to the Citizens Assembly called the 7-Cent Solution, Vote Proportional Representation, by Mr. John Kennedy of Burnaby. The key idea is the one that I've just outlined, that the body of elected representatives holds in trust all of the citizens' votes, the first-choice votes only, which are cast by proxy on their behalf with every vote in Parliament. So each elected representative is entrusted with first-place votes. First-place votes for the losing candidates are retained by the party and reassigned to an elected representative. Some accommodation is required to avoid wasting votes for independent candidates and unrepresented parties. And proxy voting, of course, is something that we all know of as the standard in corporate shareholder democracy. But in a political democracy, the way to think of it is that every adult citizen is an owner entitled to exactly one equal voting share to be entrusted in the representative. And what we have now, by contrast, is we count the votes, the winners are elected, and they go to Parliament. And how many votes do they have? One, their own. All of the citizens' votes are thrown away. Now, the conclusions that I would want to make to you are that truly democratic representative government cannot be achieved simply by changing how the citizens vote. Truly democratic representative government can only be achieved by changing both how the citizens vote and how the Parliament votes. PPR 123, which eliminates strategic voting and wasted votes, is based on the alternative vote, which thereby ensures that every elected representative has true democratic legitimacy by being the candidate supported by a majority of the electors. And then in Parliament, we have true democratic legitimacy again on the basis, and not only legitimacy, but absolute equitability by the voting power of each party being exactly equal to and derived from all of the citizens' first-place votes. And because we use the alternative vote, it ensures that the first-place vote is uncoerced and therefore an honest vote. So please, no more looking backward to previous centuries in search of the best way to do voting in the digital age. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jewell. So we'll go to the first questioner, Ms. Sohota, for 5 minutes, please.
Hello. Thank you to all our panelists that are here today. I think today's been a great day of panels. It's very diverse opinions from person to person, so we enjoy that. I will start with you, Mr. Jewell. First of all, I'd like to thank you and your lovely wife, Diana, for visiting me in Brampton and presenting me with your PPR system, perfect proportional representation, right? Is that what you're calling it? I think we can benefit, though, from a little bit of a further explanation to the system. I think we've heard it also called weighted voting. Is that true? Is that a reference that you've heard? Because under your system, would the weight of each individual MP's vote change in the House of Commons? Is that a correct representation?
I wouldn't like to refer to it as a weighted vote, although mathematically you could consider it as such. But as I've tried to explain, the rationale for it is that you are not voting your own single vote. You are voting all of the votes that have been entrusted in you. And that is true for all of the members, and everyone's vote is entrusted to somebody. So, yes, you could say that's a weighted vote, and indeed there's even a stronger reason for thinking that it might be considered in that way, because one of the issues with respect to the matter is that it could be that there are constitutional issues where some provinces may be guaranteed a certain number of seats, and my solution to that one is to derive the equivalent seat total that each member would hold in trust by using the total vote and do a simple calculation to say so many votes is equal to so many seats. We're talking, of course, fractional seats, and so within the Parliament itself, you would need computers to keep score of either the citizens' votes or the equivalent seat total votes instead. But
Have you looked at a specific example that you could give us, a simulation maybe from your riding here or your region?
Well, the thing I'd like to respond is that this proposal is strictly neutral and scrupulously fair to all voters, all parties, and all candidates. So that's the first thing to know, because it goes right back to the citizens' votes, and because it's using only their uncoerced vote, which doesn't exist today. I think the Broadbent report said there was something like 40-something percent of the votes are strategic votes. Who knows what those people really would have preferred to do? So I did do one number as an example, with the Green Party having only one elected member, it became fairly easy to figure out. According to the last election, the number of votes that the Green Party got would be the equivalent of about 12 seats. So Ms. May, when she would vote in Parliament, would have about 12 seats. The people who are Liberal representatives, they would probably be about three-quarters of a seat. Mm-hmm. And the reason you'd be less than one is because you are overrepresented in Parliament.
Well, thank you, Mr. Jewell. That cleared up some of my questions, and I admire your dedication that you have to electoral reform. They've been watching every single one of our committee meetings. I've got to say that's more dedication than we expect from the average person, but you're not an average couple, I guess, so thank you for that.
Thank you. Mr. Cullen.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to our witnesses and the audience members that have joined us here this afternoon. I'll start with you, Mr. Canseco. Bienvenidos. Es muy interesante todas sus cosas, y yo sé que our interpreters can handle that. Would the nada. The I wonder, you noticed there seems to be, I don't know, I'm going to not use the word correlation, but I don't have another one, a similarity between support for proportional systems among younger voters and people from the West. Let me draw an inference there. Well, let me ask first, and then I'll make my inference. Why? Why do you think that is?
I think there's two reasons behind this. I mean, one of them is definitely a fact that younger voters tend to gravitate towards parties that have not formed a government in the past.
Right.
Many of them, I think we've seen it in some of the federal elections, provincial elections that I've covered, the 18 to 34 vote tends to gravitate towards parties that are not necessarily the Liberal Party at the federal stage, the Conservative Party at the Liberal stage. And there seems to be this tendency, especially for people who are sort of new to democracy and are voting for the first or second time,
they're idealists,
that they've lost
yeah.
the election, that they voted for a candidate who finished in third or fourth or fifth place. Tends to happen more here. I mean, we've had a lot of discussions about electoral reform. We had a couple of referenda provincially that didn't reach the threshold that was established. So we have been talking about this for longer, I would say, than many other Canadian provinces or regions.
So that longer conversation just for the West Coast. I guess what I'm wondering at is I've been looking at the results of a Manitoba election. I'm sure you've looked at it as well, asking voters why they don't vote. It was in the non-voting category. And this was expressed by many that they felt their vote didn't count, that they lived in a riding which had a known outcome. I live in a such-and-such riding. It doesn't matter if I vote. We hear that expressed when surveying young people, why they don't participate, because it doesn't matter. It's a natural human thing. Why participate in something if you have no effect on the thing? I guess I'm inferring some alignment also, not just with the familiarity of the conversation on the West Coast, but that feeling of the alienation Mr. Moskop talked about a little earlier. We saw this in our last election, voters still going to the polls in BC, hearing results from Atlantic Canada and almost a decisive result. A lot of people say, well, why bother if my vote doesn't matter? Vote should always matter. The support for proportionality seems to move that way, in that if I can find a system where my vote is guaranteed to matter regardless of my age or where I happen to live in the country, then I'm going to support it. Am I stretching too far here?
No, it's a fair way to analyze it. And it happens mostly with voters who are aged 18 to 34, more than anything because they're new to the system and they're trying to figure out what is going on and they're motivated, maybe they're actually participating in a campaign, volunteering, donating their time or their money, and they find out that the representation that they would probably like to have is not going to take place after the election.
Mr. Kim, I'm wondering, just looking through your notes, I don't know if you land on a preferred type of voting system, if you go between the proportional or the current system at all. Do you express a preference?
No.
You don't have one?
No, I'm choosing among flawed alternatives. I think the trade-off between them is almost perfect. So you know, what I get from one, I lose from another.
Okay. So the mandate of this committee is to come up with something amongst these imperfections. Let me just a moment to Mr. Jewell. Here's my intuitive challenge to the, I know you don't want to call it weighted, but it's the only way I can think of it, that MPs in the House, based on your system, their casting of their vote would have different impact, would have different significance on the outcome of any vote in Parliament. That's correct?
That is correct, but I would like to explain that. The party vote is exactly what it should be. Okay,
right. The final result is that if
yes.
the Conservatives get 20% of the vote, they contribute to 20%
of the
vote.
So, yes, let me retranslate my answer to your question. If your party is underrepresented, your weighted vote will be greater than one, as it were. If your party is underrepresented, it will be less than one, but it will rectify the difference, it'll rectify the distortion.
So, I guess I'll just give you my impressions of that. I imagine that voters represented by people who have a greater weight to their MP's casting ballot will feel empowered, yet voters who have an MP representing them that is at a 0.7 of a vote will not feel as great. It's just that I express this. I know the goal you're aiming at an intuitive level. I could imagine people standing in the House of Commons. I could imagine voters saying, you're my MP. I want you to vote this way.
Well,
Elizabeth's got 12 votes, I've got 0.75 votes, and yet we're still members of Parliament, and it feels odd.
Well, I'm glad you've challenged this aspect of it, but I'm pleased to respond to it as well, because the first point you made 2 minutes ago was people living in a riding where the outcome is a known conclusion have no reason to vote. In this system, every vote counts equal, period, all the time. So it solves that problem. And as to what happens in Parliament, you vote one vote. The computer says, oh, you have 1.5 votes or you have 0.8 votes or whatever. So you don't see it. You don't need to think about it. The citizen doesn't need to see it or think about it. All they know is that their wishes, as they express them in the election through their honest first-place vote, will be honored with every vote in Parliament.
Thank you. Monsieur Sainte-Marie.
Gentlemen, good afternoon. I will give you time to put on your headsets for the interpretation. I would like to take this opportunity to use my Spanish. I'm very happy to meet you. Okay. Everybody okay? Everybody ready? Mr. Joel, one thing that I really liked in your brief is the possibility for MPs to vote remotely. Since we are in Vancouver right now, we just missed 4 votes over the last hour. So this is part of the sacrifice that is being made while meeting you, but we are getting a greater benefit than the cost. Be assured of that. I will have a few questions in a few minutes for you, Mr. Joel, but I will start with Mr. Canseco. Let me ask a question to Mr. Joel. In your system, you keep the same ridings. The person who gets the most votes wins the election, but you are using a preferential system to weigh the vote of each one. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct. The alternative vote is such that they count, as you understand, I think the Australian example, all votes are counted, first place votes. If the leader has 50% plus one, the person is elected. If not, the bottom candidate is eliminated, and those votes for that eliminated candidate revert to their second place vote.
Okay. Donc pour élire la personne,
so to elect the person is a preferential system. So you know that this kind of system has a tendency to reduce third parties to be focused on more centrist parties, which would increase the difference between votes expressed for each party and the number of MPs that represent them.
Well, that's a possibility, but another possibility is that because the first place vote is an honest vote, that third party candidate, as you refer to it, might get many more first place votes than they do under the existing system. And in any case, the first place vote counts for that party regardless of how many members are elected.
Okay, merci.
Thank you. Madam May, please.
Thank you to all the witnesses who are here today. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. I'm going to turn to Mr. Jewell just because I really do need to understand your system better. It seems to me it is perfect in proportionality, but there are other values we've been asked to look at, including inclusiveness. So I'm picturing myself here in the election. I'd certainly have the voting power to potentially work in a minority government to some greater effect. But I'm still just one person, and I think I'm going to die. There are committees, there are amendments, there are debates. You have to get so. And of course, we'd also like to see greater proportionality in the House to be closer to the gender parity in real life in our society. Is there some way that I'm missing in which your system would increase the number of women in Parliament? I think I know the answer. It couldn't increase the number of people who are actually, say, Green Party members working in Parliament, but would it do anything around inclusivity and increasing the proportion of women or other unrepresented groups?
Thank you, Ms. May. Well, firstly, I'd say again that the intent of this system is to be scrupulously fair to everyone. And when we have a system that is fair, the thing that none of us can foresee is what will be the difference in the voter behavior if they have a fair system. So I can't say that you will have more colleagues, But what I can say is that you are supremely disadvantaged under the existing system, and nobody really knows what the natural level of support for your party would be if there was an honest voting system. So that's the first thing. Now, as to the matter of gender parity, I do have ideas on that, which I have elaborated on. I've got about 30 documents on our website. But just to make it simple, I believe that the election after 2019 should be one where Elections Canada goes through a serious redistricting. And the two things that I think would be areas to focus on would be to reduce the number of ridings in urban areas, because we will now have a system in which it is geography neutral, population neutral. It doesn't matter how many people are in any riding. Every citizen's vote counts the right amount wherever they happen to be. So, Mr. Cullen, your riding, you have a heck of a tough riding to handle. It's tough for you. It's tough for your constituents. I don't think that's a good use of the seats within the legislature. We have so many surplus seats in the urban areas. So I'm saying Elections Canada should be tasked to squeeze out some of those surplus seats, reallocate them geographically where it would provide better service and make your efforts as MPs easier. And then as to females, there is no reason why we couldn't have within an urban area a district where there would be, say, six seats, three of which could be reserved for male and three for female. And then you get gender parity by the design of the system and the candidates that the parties propose for it. So I think there's a much better way to get, and that you can do the same for other diversity goals that you would have. Within the urban areas, there's plenty of potential to do much, much smarter things with the seats that we've got.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Deltes.
Thank you, Chair. Gentlemen, it's a real pleasure for me to meet you. First of all, Mr. Kim, I just want to make a short comment on what you said, because it's quite interesting. You talk about every issue, evaluate, and you will see that not so much people support you. I think I'm speaking about all the colleagues here. You know, we cannot find anyone who supports 100% of the proposition of our own party. It's impossible. Humanly, it's impossible. I used to say that if you see someone saying that he's 100% agree with his program and every party is 100% of his colleague or agree on 100% of that, you have 100% in front of you a liar, because it's impossible. Humanly, it's impossible. But, you know, this is democracy. This is why we have to respect the fact that it's not a majority. Usually, it's not a clear majority. People have been elected under 50%. My case, I've been lucky. 3 times on 4, I've been elected with more than 50%, like Mr. Boulris in his old writing to it twice. So, you know, it's very touchy, but at least we have a consensus on most issues. So this is why we can move on the real issue of the people, even if we do not agree on all aspects. As I said earlier, gentlemen, I welcome that kind of discussion. In our party, we have the door open. We want a referendum for sure, but we are open to discussion about the future of the electoral system. So this is why, Mr. Jewell, I welcome your proposition. Even if I'm not quite sure that I understand it quite well, so this is why I raise this question. What do you think do you think we can educate people about so many propositions that we have on the table? How do you think we could do and we could achieve that? Because it's not an easy task. We run with this electoral system for the last century and more. If we want something else, it's quite a challenge. So what do you think we should do to educate our people before moving on with a new electoral system?
Consultation, is that the question? Oh, I'm sorry.
Consultation or how to educate our people, how to tell to the people, well, this is the new way we want to deal with the electoral system. So just to be sure that people understand what the issue is.
Well, I think it's quite simple to understand, to explain this system. It's different, to be sure. But if you you explain to people that you vote your first three choices, and everyone knows how leaders are elected. That's the process that is used. So that's how your individual member is elected. People will understand that their vote will be taken forward into Parliament and trusted in their elected representative if they voted for the candidate who was elected, or someone else from that party if their candidate was defeated. I think they'll understand that pretty quickly, and they'll understand that they're getting a better say with that system than they are under this system. But did you ask about the question of validation for a system of this nature? Or?
Okay, I will express myself in French, so the translator will be more easier for me, for you to understand what I tried to.
You mentioned a referendum.
I invite you to
yeah,
to.
Well, I have actually recommended a referendum on the on the PPR side of it. I think the government has all the power to implement the alternative vote. It's an upgrade on the first-past-the-post system. The Parliament has the authority of that. It's a proven system. It's been used in Australia for a century. And it is the mothership for the PPR side. So I say push forward with alternative vote. Put out the PPR side to the public in a referendum so that they have the understanding of what is being proposed and what has changed, and let them decide. And if they wish to not have PPR, so be it. But I think that would be a pretty easy sell, because it's clearly putting more power in the hands of the people. And as was previously said, putting what the public wants is more power in their hands. And so.
And referendum is the ultimate tool, or the ultimate weapon to give power to the people, a referendum.
Well,
ultimate tool.
Please, okay, it's your call whether you go with a referendum or not, and I'm not a huge advocate of referenda. I've seen how easy they can be perverted by political forces, and I also have an enormous respect for the role of representative government. I had a small experience as a municipal elected member. I know how hard elected members work, and it's that research and deliberation is what the people really need. And if you guys are comfortable, and I think if you have a consensus that is cross-party, you have all the authority to go forward with this thing.
Okay, we'll go to Monsieur Boulris.
Oui, merci. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to the witnesses for having been with us here this afternoon. And I thank the people of Vancouver who are in such great numbers in the hall here, so passionate and so interested in an issue that is so fundamental to our democracy. We received the mandate to study various options, but normally, and we were told that normally 2015 would be the final election with first-past-the-post system. And I just say first past the post even when I'm speaking French, because it goes faster. Mr. Joel, I would like to ask you a question, because I heard your explanation earlier. We haven't talked about this for a long time, but there's a question on Twitter from Keith, who's saying, Mr. Joel, what happens with your system if a party does not elect members, but gets 3-4% of the vote? Because you give a different weight to the vote of each member, but there's always the possibility of a party that would get 6% across the country who wouldn't have any members. So there'd be no way to give vote to that to give any weight to that popular vote.
Well, that's what I was alluding to with the simple statement: some accommodation is necessary to avoid wasting votes for independent candidates or parties that don't elect anyone. So the possibilities I would see would be to set a threshold. That's a common thing proportional systems. Set a threshold, 3-5%, whatever it is, and if a party reaches that, then they are assured representation extraterritorially from a seat. So it could be pick the strongest defeated candidate or the leader of a small party, whatever. So you'd have to do that. And then for independent candidates, my thought there was to have an ombudsperson type thing where any of the otherwise unrepresented votes for independents would have some representation there in a nonpartisan form.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all of you for attending our session today. I've heard some excellent testimony and some new ideas that haven't come up so far this week, at least. I wanted to ask Mr. Canseco if he had any data on the more up-to-date data than what we heard earlier about the number of Canadians that are intently engaged in this process.
The number of Canadians who are intensely engaged in this process is fairly low. Looking at the numbers, it's probably around 25 to 30% who are following this either very closely or somewhat closely.
Thank you. We'll go now to Mr. DeCourcy.
Mr. Jewell, I caught in your follow-up testimony to questioning, you believe that we should go ahead and move to an AV system and run a referendum on the perfect proportional representation. Is that what you concluded?
Yes. I did feel that a referendum on the PPR side, since it is unprecedented, I think it's something that would need to have the public acceptance. And I do believe that's quite achievable because of the merit and the nature of it. And I think it's also something that's easy to explain to people. And especially, I think it's easy because it won't have the political opposition of opportunism, which we certainly witnessed here in British Columbia, that the political parties had reasons to defeat that recommendation. I don't think they'll have the same motivation to defeat PPR because it is scrupulously fair to everyone. And since I may not have another chance to talk on this, I'd like to also say that the relationships within the political world should also benefit enormously, because on the alternative vote side, you don't win by undercutting your opponent. You win by getting secondary support. And in Parliament, you are not likely going to have majority, and you need to work with other people, whether it's coalition or minority government, whatever. But I think the nature of having a truly honest voting system where the political parties cannot game by slagging one another, I think this should help politics both in elections. The public's fed up with this kind of nonsense, as you well know, but it wins. Unfortunately, under the system we've got, that kind of bad behavior is rewarded, and under an honest system, it will be punished.
Thank you very much.
So that concludes our panel, which was very, very interesting. There was a lot to get into in terms of mathematics and theoretical foundations, and so that was a slightly different flavor than we've had for a little while, and so it gives us a lot of substance, let's put it that way, a lot of substance for our report, and for that we're very grateful to the witnesses.